H. E. Safin's Common Sense Preparedness, an American Readiness Program. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome you to the show and let you know what you're in for. Common Sense Preparedness was designed to give the American public the much-needed information on how to manage and respond to any type of disaster we might face, natural, man-made, or personal. We will not tell you who to vote for or talk about conspiracy theories or when the world is going to end, but we'll get you ready in case that does happen. During this show, you'll be exposed to current emergency information from government and non-government sources, a few musical artists, and we will talk about the true important information that everyone needs to know. First aid, CPR, what is a tornado, what to do during an earthquake, how to prepare a family emergency plan, a family emergency communication plan, how to hunt, fish, how to build a fire, what to do in case of power outages. The show will be hosted by myself, Tim Howard, and a variety of guests who will come and share their expertise with us. Nowadays, everywhere you look, someone is an expert. Just because someone writes a book or runs a blog does not make them an expert. However, my credentials? Well, they're pretty extensive with over 25 years field experience as a chemical biological warfare instructor, firefighter, correctional safety manager, area safety manager, safety inspector. I have been associated with various federal, state, and local governments. Currently, I'm associated with the FEMA think tank, OSHA field councils, and HE safety consultants. I have received numerous awards and citations throughout my career with the United States Air Force, U.S. Department of Justice, founding member of the United States Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. Department of Labor. What does this mean? Well, it means you'll get reliable, verifiable information, not paranoia theories. I will share the experiences I have seen in the field since 1986, and I will be able to explain some of the why things are happening. Before we go any further, any information that you hear on the show or find on csp.hesafety.org is to be taken as informational only. We are not legal or medical advisors. We are here to give you alternate information to get you to think about things and use your own common sense to make your decisions. We do suggest that you talk to your personal medical and legal advisors to help you make a well-rounded, informative decision. Our website, csp.hesafety.org, has been designed to give you more information than can be found on this program. The website is free, so stop on by and begin your research with Common Sense Preparedness. You can download or review any of the past shows from our website and comment on any of the news articles that you may see. Also, please show some love to our sponsors. It is because of them we are able to reach you and offer you this life-saving information. Our sponsors have been selected based on the quality of service they offer to our listening audience. They are the vendors that should be of most interest to you. Common Sense Preparedness' mission is not to sell you anything, but instead it is to save as many lives as we can. It is sad to hear about any life being lost when it was avoidable. Remember, a wise man prepares for the darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Listen to Common Sense Preparedness at csp.hesafety.org.
Welcome to Common Sense Preparedness with your host, my grandpa, Tim Howard.
Welcome to Common Sense Preparedness Weekly Situation Report for the week of May 20th, 2012. Our environmental report. We have an environmental alert for the Japanese debris from the tsunami still headed to the U.S. And we have an alert update for the nuclear situation in Japan. Our U.S. radiation monitor network looks good. Highest background radiation levels in Philadelphia. Our river report. We have 33 gauges near flood stage, 5 reporting minor flooding, 1 moderate flooding, and 2 reporting major flooding. Our air quality report, we now have a new link on our websites for daily reports, so visit csp.hesafety.org, and under air quality you will find our new link to get daily reports. Our drought report. Texas, Georgia, Arizona, Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, New Mexico, and Oklahoma are all reporting exceptional drought conditions. our food safety report, we have an alert for the FDA has removed all Korean certified shippers from the interstate certified shellfish shippers list. A food safety alert for oysters from Cape Cod Bay. A food safety alert for norovirus in Louisiana. We also have an alert for E. coli in South Carolina. And an alert update for diamond pet food. Now, with this diamond pet food outbreak, we've been hearing about it for a couple weeks now. The main concern here is it's not going to kill your dog or your pet, but it can give you serious problems if you should touch the dog's feces or pet dog. It actually can transmit by petting a dog, so you need to be very careful with this. Food safety is up to you. Make sure you cook your food to over 140 degrees and keep your food refrigerated to under 40 degrees. And when you're dining out, check the restaurant's last inspection with your local health, Board of Health. CSP.HESafety.org has links posted on all state health departments and links to all local health departments. Very important. I know you hear me say that a lot. I recently was in California and went to my old favorite restaurant and noticed that they had a restaurant inspection of a bee the last time. That is the last time I'll be going to that restaurant because the food was poor quality, and you could see the difference. So always check your restaurant's last inspection. Now, our Homeland Security report, FEMA report, the 2012 National Preparedness Report has been out, and you can find it on our website. We still have a Homeland Security alert for a computer attack possible on July 9th. And a new report came out on the vulnerability of the U.S. to an EMP attack. Now, the key word here is attack. We're not talking solar flares. For a solar flare to produce an EMP pulse that would affect us here in the lower 48, it would have to have destroyed our ozone layer. And at that point, we have more problems than to worry about than our electronics not working. Common Sense Preparedness Homeland Security Report has links to its on its websites where you can find information on the Afghan War, Border Wars reports, latest news and activities, U.S. gang activities. So go to csp.hesafety.org for more information on that. Now, our hurricane report. Yes, we are in hurricane season. Tropical Storm Aletta is in the East Pacific. It's located about 770 miles south of the southern tip of Baja California, Mexico. It's moving west and northwest at 9 miles per hour and will not pose any kind of threat to the coastline of the U.S. Remember, preparedness is as easy as ABC. Always be informed. Build a kit. Create a plan. Our medical report, we have an update on pertussis in the U.S. And our influenza report is declining in the U.S. The outpatient visits for influenza-like illness was 1.1% this week, which is far below the national baseline of 2.4%. Our seismic report, there's been 7,704 recordable seismic events in the past 30 days. Papua New Guinea had a 6.0 earthquake. Chile had a 6.2 earthquake. And for regional breakdowns, visit our website at csp.hesafety.org. Now our solar weather report, sunspot 1476 is departing the Earth's side of the sun and is getting weaker by the day. Sunspots 1479 and 1482 are now coming into the Earth's side, and they are large sunspots that might give us some troubles in the next 2 weeks. Our website has started producing solar weather forecasts from NOAA, so check our websites daily for that information. Our X-ray levels are at a C2, our K-index is at a 3, our X-class flares are a 1% possibility, M-class flares are 15% possibility, and geomagnetic storms at 20% possibility. Our NEOs, we have 1,287 near-Earth objects on radar, and there's no close approaches currently. Well, that about does it for this week's Common Sense Preparedness Situation Report. If you'd like any more information on the items you found in this report, please visit us at csp.hesafety.org. And remember, a wise man prepares for darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Listen to Common Sense Preparedness Digital Broadcast and American Readiness Program at csp.hesafety.org. Yeah, I want to take a few minutes to talk about the environmental alert that was issued by Common Sense Preparedness on May 1st in regards to the Japanese nuclear crisis. A senator from Oregon, Senator Wyden, on April 16th, he issued a press release regarding a nuclear power station in Japan that was devastated by the tsunami and the earthquake. He personally toured the facilities and issued a couple letters and a press release. You can go to csp.hesafety.org to see the press release and the letters. We have links up there. But here's the curious part. Senator Wyden reported the situation was worse than reported. This fact is not the first time the Japanese authorities or TEPCO has been accused of this since the devastating earthquake last year. The senator noted how fragile the power plant is in its current state. Any more seismic events could bring the plant into the position of releasing radioactive material into the environment. We are not over this threat yet. It is still lingering but not being talked about anymore. Because of this press release, and due to the fact that this accusation has been levied before, I'm urging all residents of the Western United States, be prepared for a radioactive event. Create plans for shelter-in-place situations or SIP situations, decontamination protocols, and home medical treatment plans for radiation sickness. Hey, we can no longer sit and wait for TEPCO or the Japanese government to properly secure the nuclear material that might cause a radioactive fallout that will be felt in the Western United States. We must begin to prepare for the event right now. Common Sense Preparedness will be doing a series of shows and reports on how to mitigate a radiological event over the next few months in order to help prepare us for the possibility of this tragic event coming to the Western U.S. shores. Now, one of the things that really got to me was, on April 26th, Common Sense Preparedness issued another environmental alert about the tsunami debris that was headed to the U.S. The debris from the massive Japanese earthquake and tsunami from last year is heading to Alaska, Hawaii, and the U.S. West Coast, and Canada, experts say. Debris is scattered over 4,000 miles in one direction and 1,000 miles in another. It's a large mass. The Japanese government has estimated that 70% of the debris sank. But, you know, CNN was reporting that nobody's certain how much of the remaining 1.5 million tons of debris is still floating in the Pacific Ocean. Buoys, a soccer ball, an unmanned fishing trolley, and other items that float on the surface of the water and can be pushed by the wind have already turned up. The problem here is that the oil and chemical drums and fuel cylinders could also wash ashore. Now, put that together with the radioactive material in that nuclear power plant that could be devastated by any kind of seismic event right now. And granted, most of that would probably sink to the ground, sink to the ocean floor bottom. But what radioactive release will there be? And it will be coming to the U.S. Now, as for the tsunami debris, NOAA says models show the outer edge of the debris is at the West Coast and Alaska, and most of the debris is north of Hawaii, moving east slowly. The front edge of it has gotten here, and a whole cloud should arrive by the end of another year. NOAA said it's unlikely radioactive material from the nuclear power plant would make landfall, but there's a possibility. The U.S. Coast Guard said the Coast Guard would focus on pollution threats and potential impediments to navigation. But what about a radioactive fallout? I don't think they can handle that. It's difficult to predict just where the debris will come ashore. Due to the wind and current, we can only forecast a few days in advance, but it should be an upswing of debris on the shorelines in the next few months. On March 11, 2011, earthquake and tsunami in Japan crippled the nuclear power plant, destroyed homes, and killed thousands of people. It's not over with yet, folks. Until they can secure that material to where it will be safe in any kind of seismic event, we still have a possibility of radioactive fallout reaching the U.S. We must be prepared. We must be prepared for a radiological incident. We're only going to have a few days' notice, if any. So we must take it on ourselves and prepare for ourselves and our families in case this should happen. And like I said, HE Safety Common Sense Preparedness will be doing a series of educational series on items that we can find that will help us through any kind of incident. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on BBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team, preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support, health care, and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier. Common Sense Preparedness brought to you in part by PatriotMusic.com.
America is known the world over for its passion for freedom and individual rights. If you love your country as much as I do, and if you'd like to hear great music inspiring this passion, check out PatriotMusic.com. Download music from three great albums, including a new album just released, with a cover you won't forget. PatriotMusic.com.
Hi, this is Matt Fitzgibbons with PatriotMusic.com. You're listening to Common Sense Preparedness with Tim Howard.
This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Rocky Mountain Survival Gear, your complete source for all things camping and prepping. They recognize the need of many people in the United States struggling to put together survival packs, not knowing where to start or what they need. So Rocky Mountain Survival Gear will be offering customized bug-out bags, emergency kits, and 72-hour bags to fit your specific needs. All you need to do is click on the items you need, and they'll put it together for you. Remember, once a disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. So prepare now for the future with Rocky Mountain Survival Gear. Contact them at www.rockymountainsurvivalgear.com or give them a call at 720-244-9701. Once again, that's 720-244-9701. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on BBS Radio. Since it's that time of season, I want to go ahead and talk a little bit about wildfires. The threat of wildland fires for people living near wildland areas or using recreational facilities in wilderness areas such as camping is a real and dangerous threat, and occurs over 250 times every year. Advanced planning and knowledge and knowing how to protect buildings and your family in these areas can lessen the devastation effect of a wildland fire. There are plenty of examples of wildland fires destroying some homes in a neighborhood, but not others. That's because the other homes had pre-planned for wildfires and were safe. Now, one thing I want to mention here is that a wildfire is a creature all of its own, and a fire can and will do things that cannot be predicted. So even using all the ideas that we're going to talk about, a wildfire can destroy your home. However, the ideas we're going to outline and talk about can give your property and yourself's best chance there is of surviving a wildfire. Now, one of the worst conditions there can be for a wildfire to be a major concern is during a period of long drought in a local area. That's when trees and grass are at its driest, and wildfires can rage. Now, some things you want to do prior to wildfire season, or before a wildfire occurs. Now, understand something. When a wildfire occurs, the demand on the fire department service is extreme. Protecting life is their first priority. Protecting property and resources is secondary. With both wildland vegetation and a large number of structures threatened, the fire department resources become overwhelmed very fast. If you've ever been involved with one, you can see the frustration and exhaustion on firefighters' faces anytime you see one after they fight a wildland firefighter. Often, they may have to decide between attacking a fire or choosing which structures can be saved. You can help improve your firefighting efforts by making your property a place of to effectively battle a blaze and make it more likely a structure to be saved. Now, some things you want to know prior to wildfire or if you're in the area of a drought. When you're camping, learn safe camp and open pit fire practices. Avoid open burning completely during dry season. Build fires away from any nearby trees or brushes. Always have a way to extinguish a fire quickly and completely available at all times. Never leave a fire, even a cigarette, burning unattendedly. Now, your home shelter, some things you want to do for your home shelter area. Perform weed abatement on a regular schedule for structures being built near wooded areas. And weed abatement means pull your weeds. Pull weeds or weed whips before the seeds heads mature and reduce. This will reduce the fire hazard and invasive plant seed banks. Use fire retardant material when building, renovating, or retrofitting structures. Create a safety zone to separate the home from combustible plants and vegetation. Stone walls can act as a heat shield and deflect flames. Swimming pools and patios can often be a safety zone. Check for fire hazards around your house. If you have to install electrical lines, install them underground if possible. Keep all trees and shrubs, limbs trimmed so they don't come in contact with wires. That's electrical wires we're talking about. Prune all branches around the residence to a height of 8 to 10 feet. Keep trees and shrubs properly pruned. Prune all trees so the lower tree limbs are 6 to 10 feet from the ground. Remove seedlings and scrub growth at the base of tree trunks and mow the lawn regularly. Keep trees adjacent to your building free from dead or dying wood and moss. Remove all dead limbs, needles, and debris from rain gutters and the roof. Dispose of cutting and debris promptly according to local regulations. Store combustibles and flammable material in approved safety containers and keep them away from the house. That's why in most wooded areas you'll find the garages detached from the house. Use care when refueling garden equipment and maintain it regularly. Dispose of smoking materials carefully. You should have a butt can, especially if you live in the woods. Be sure the irrigation system is well maintained and works. Keep your chimney clean. Provide a clear space around your chimney for at least 10 feet by removing all tree limbs and any dead branches that hang over the roof. Even during the winter, when you're using your chimney, it can heat up and cause a fire. Install smoke detectors on every level of your home and near sleeping areas. Make evacuation plans. Plan several routes in case the fire blocks exit routes. Have your disaster supplies on hand. Now, some of the disaster supplies you want to talk about here is fire axes, shovels, gardening tools. That's how you fight a forest fire. Pre-cut and label material to cover your windows and vents. Store them along with hammers and nails in an easily accessible place. Locate wood piles and fuel tanks at least 30 feet to 40 feet from all structures and maintain a 10-foot vegetation-free zone around them. Make sure decks, porches, and landings are free of unnecessary clutter and that anything remaining can be removed quickly. You know, you got your patio furniture out there, you can put them in the garage quickly, because they do become torches. Be sure to keep your water reservoirs and potable tanks filled. Have maps and hoses stored with the rest of your emergency supplies, ladders, shovels, etc. Be sure to leave a minimum of 30 feet around the house to accommodate for fire trucks if necessary. So that means clear an area. Your driveway should be at least 30 feet wide. Make periodic inspections of your home, looking for any deterioration such as breaks or spaces between roof tiles, your roof tiles, wood, trees coming onto your roofs, cracks or crevices in your structure. Periodically inspect your property, clearing dead wood and dense vegetation at a distance of at least 30 feet from your house. Move firewood away from your home and attachments like fences and decks. You don't want them right up on your home. Now, any structure attached to your house, such as a deck, porch, fence, or outbuilding, should be considered part of the house. These structures can act as fuel bridges, particularly if constructed with flammable materials. Therefore, consider the following. If you wish to attach an all-wood fence to your house, use masonry or metal as a protective barrier between your fence and your home. Use metal when constructing of trellises and cover it with high moisture, low flammability vegetation. And we'll talk more about the vegetation you can have. Prevent combustible materials and debris from accumulating beneath patio decks and elevated porches. Screen or box in the area below patios and decks with wire screen no longer than 1/8 inch. This also keeps the critters out. Clear all flammable vegetation within a minimum of 130 feet radius of your home. Slope area should be cleared even further. Keep your grass short and discourage underbrush from growing along the edges of your safety zone. Clean up all leaves, fallen needles, and dead vegetation as quick as possible. Now for large lots, vegetation more than 100 feet from the home should be thinned and dead vegetation removed. Now, when you're building your home or modifying it, some fire-resistant building materials. Avoid using wooden stakes and shingles for a roof. Use tile, stucco, metal siding, brick, concrete block, rock, or other fire-resistant material. Use only thick, tempered safety glass in large windows and sliding glass doors. This way, with a wildfire and the heat generation, it's not going to shatter. When constructing, renovating, or adding to your home, you can also consider the following. Location. Slope of terrain. Be sure to build on the most level portion of the land. Since fire spreads more rapidly even on minor slopes, set your single-story structure at least 30 feet back from any ridge or cliff. Increase distance if your home will be higher than one story. In designing and building your structure, remember, primary goals are fuel and exposure reduction. Now, design and building structures with fire safety in mind. Use construction material that are fire-resistant or non-combustible whenever possible. For roofs construction, consider using materials such as a Class A asphalt, shingles, slate or clay tile, metal, ceramic, cement, or terracotta tiles. These are less flammable than regular wood and shingle roofs. Constructing a fire-resistant subroof can add protection as well. On interior walls, facing, fire-restrictive material, such as stucco or masonry, are much better choices than vinyl, which is often softened and melt during a fire. Window materials and size are very important. You see, smaller planes hold up better in their frames than larger ones do. Double-plane glass and tempered glass are more reliable and are very effective heat barriers than single-plane glass. Plastic skylights? Nah, not a good idea. They can melt. Install non-flammable shutters on windows and skylights. To prevent sparks from entering your home through vents, cover exterior attic and underfloor vents with wire screening no larger than 1/8 of an inch of mesh. Make sure under eaves and soffit vents are as close as possible to the roof line. Box and eaves, be sure to provide adequate ventilation, though, to prevent condensation. Include a driveway that is wide enough to provide easy access for fire engines, 12 feet wide with a vertical clearance of 15 feet, and a slope that is less than 5%. The driveway and access roads should be well maintained, clearly marked, and include ample turnaround space near the house. Also provide easy access for fire service water supplies whenever possible. This way, when they're fighting a forest fire, they're going to go to your house to put a staging area in. If they have easy access for fire trucks, they'll save your house this way. Provide at least 2 ground level floors for easy and safe exits, and at least 2 means of escape, doors and windows, in each room so that everyone can get their way, have their way out. At least 2 ways out. Now, if you want some more information on this, what we've already talked about, visit hesafety.org or csp.hesafety.org, and we have links for more information for homeowners and landscaping checklists. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on CBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team, preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support, health care, and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Pure Hydration Water Purification Systems. Rocky Mountain Survival Gear is now the sole U.S. distributor of Pure Hydration Water Purification Systems, which uses no chemicals, has no wait time, and can be filled from any natural water source. The purifier eliminates pathogens, viruses, bacteria, chemicals, heavy metals, fecal matter, sediment, bad taste, and odors, and quickly turns potentially contaminated water into safe and clean drinking water. Pure Hydration offers their purifiers in 6 different personal carrier modules for every outdoor endeavor. For more information, contact Rocky Mountain Survival Gear at www.rockymountainsurvivalgear.com or give them a call at 720-244-9701. Once again, that number is 720-244-9701. I got a chance the other day to take a look at the 7-day, 2-person emergency kit from Health Operations Team. This kit is a great basic starter kit. While it does not contain all the emergency supplies that you'll need during a prolonged disaster, it has enough supplies to ensure that you will survive any 7-day disaster. That's why it's called a basic starter kit. The first thing I noticed was the versatility of the bag. It can be used as a backpack, carried by the handle, by the shoulder strap. It even has wheels on it, so if you need to roll it, you can. The food package and water supplies make the kit kind of heavy, but these are basic requirements, and there's no way of getting around this weight. That's one of the reasons physical conditioning is a requirement in any kind of preparedness plan. Now, everything in the kit is stored in plastic Ziploc bags for weatherproofing protection. First idea I got in my head was, it showed me that I can use it, this weatherproofing idea, for other items. I mean, even a radio came in a plastic bag. The kit comes with a standard first aid kit, hygiene products, rain ponchos, light sticks, rope, and even a pry bar, just to name a few items in the bag. So it has a lot of equipment in there that you do need, some basic equipment. You're going to want to modify it to your family's needs. If your family needs medication, you may want to put the family medication in there, extra eyeglasses and such. Health Operations Team has a complete listing of all the items contained in the kit on their website at hoteam.org. Now, the price on the kit is unbeatable, $130, while all other outlets charge a minimum of $199-$200 for similar kits. Health Operations Team is offering these kits at cost with 0 profit margin. What a deal. But what I want to remind you is Health Operations is a non-profit organization. If you can show them any kind of love, please do so. Even if it's a dollar, they need the help. They need the money. So they can go ahead and give these kits to people who are in need, who really need them. Now, some of the items in the kit that I would recommend to change, one would be the radio and the flashlight. Both of them are items that use batteries to operate with. I would exchange them for solar hand-cranked items. I mean, there's no reason to carry the extra weight of the batteries. There's nowhere to recharge them or anything like that. They're good for the home cache, but if you have to use it as a bug-out bag, I'd make sure I'd have solar equipment with me. Now, the coloring book and crayons, that's another thing I'd probably be changing. Now, if you have a kid that's less than 5, it's a great distraction for them. For the older kids, this is where we want to customize the bag for ourselves. We have older kids, we want to put some other stuff in there. However, it does have a deck of cards for adult distractions. Both the food packs and the water packs are edible, trust me. Now, granted, I'm a very picky eater. It's not my preferred food of choice, but in an emergency, well, I know I can eat them and get my calories that I need. They are edible. Overall, I was pleased with the starter kit. The price was great, and they'll get you through any type of emergency. So I'm recommending that if you need a kit, contact hoteam.org, and they will be able to get you one. Now, they have a special price program available for disadvantaged and the elderly. So when you talk to them, let them know what you're doing and who you are, and that you heard it on the radio show, and see if you qualify for a discounted program. But even if you don't qualify, it's still a bargain at $130. So contact Health Operations Team at www.hoteam.org. Or you can call their Georgia phone number at 678-431-8914. Once again, that number is 678-431-8914. Now here's the newest song from Matt Fitzgibbon to PatriotMusic.com.
Take more.
Hey, I want to take this opportunity to talk about the Responder 84 ALS backpack from 511 Tactical. Now, when I first saw this backpack, it was during tornado recovery operations in Kentucky earlier this year. I was immediately impressed when I saw all the equipment the medic had in his backpack. He even had an O2 bottle, and it was secured well to the inside of the backpack. When the medic opened up this ALS 84 backpack, I noticed that he had every type of trauma equipment that he was going to need, including neck braces, an O2 kit, an AED, a smaller bag containing medicine and syringes, and another one containing bandages and clot stoppers. The medic even had a portable air splint system in his backpack. Now, they are large. There was also enough room to contain all this guy's paperwork that he needed. The medic explained to me that he had been using the backpack for a few months now, and he said it was the greatest thing since sliced bread in the Borderfield medic. He told me it was easy to carry and has large enough compartments to hold the basic equipment he needed in the field to handle almost every type of emergency he would face. Now, my idea for the bag, when I saw it, was a little bit different than his. With that much room, I figured, not only would it be able to handle my family and medical kit, which is extensive, but there'd be enough room for my bug-out equipment also, reducing my overall number of bags I would need to carry. So when I got my Responder 84 ALS backpack from 511 Tactical, I immediately loaded it up with all the stuff I had and took it on a test run. I bugged out to one of my family's retreat points for 3 days. The bag was able to handle the heavy load I placed into it, including food rations, a water pack, solar blankets, an emergency radio, solar lantern, a pry bar, tarp, fire starter kit, military rain gear, military jacket, and my essential jerky and candy stash. I was even able to place my family emergency manual in the top layer compartment. To my surprise, after all this, I still had room. So in went the gun cleaning kit, the trauma kit, a shovel, a mess kit, a two-man tent, and my navigational pack. Then, on the outside, I attached my machete, a CPR kit, a small fishing tackle bag, and my trusty old sleeping bag. That is when I hit my first problem with the backpack. I still had room, and no more equipment. Good problem to have. So then I placed it on my back and automatically felt the weight distribution on my shoulders and my upper back. It was actually comfortable. When I got to the retreat area, I unloaded what I had needed in order to eat and set up camp. Now, after dinner, I laid down in my tent for a few minutes because, you know, I'm not as young as I once was. And I started to listen to the music of nature. The next thing I knew, it was getting extremely cold outside. So I jumped into my sleeping bag and fell right asleep. I awoke in the morning to a snow-covered campsite. I was not prepared for that, not at all. I went to grab my field jacket and realized that my backpack was not with me in the tent. I had left it outside. Oh boy. My 3-day trek was now down to 12 hours. Now, if my jacket and my extra clothing in the backpack are wet, well, I just have to return home early. However, to my surprise, after brushing off the snow, all the contents in the bag was dry as a bone. And that included my printed family emergency plan. The ALS 84 backpack system from 511 Tactical saved the trip. I was able to get the fire starter kit out and make a hot cup of coffee. The versatility of the backpack and the amount of equipment it was able to handle made me an avid believer. It can be used as a professional medical response kit or a bug out kit. The overall 3,941 cubic inches can handle most equipment, and the YKK zipper system on the bag is a great improvement over the old zipper system that would always get stuck and eventually break. Another item of this backpack that I found interesting was the see-through zipper mesh pockets on the inside of the bag. It is of great value when you're not sure where your items are stored. A quick glance, and you know where your equipment is without having to open up each pouch to find out where they're at. The removable kit system, blue and red bags, is useful for storing small items and keeping them separate from the rest of your gear. I was able to store a med kit in one, making it readily available if I needed it. I also found a Velcro inside the pack to be useful for attaching my mag light holder and a few of the other belt pouches that had Velcro on them. This way I was able to have my pandemic kit secured without having to search for it. Overall, I found the Responder 84 ALS backpack to be a great addition for $249.99 because it is large enough to turn two bags into one. With each bag costing about $150 each, you end up about $50 ahead of the game. For more information on the Responder 84 ALS backpack, come visit csp.atsafety.org. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on CBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team, preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support, health care, and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier.
Emergencies happen every day. Are you prepared for a crisis? HE Safety can help. Together we'll prepare for natural and man-made disasters, medical emergencies, extreme weather, and other safety-related issues. It all happens on the Common Sense Preparedness Show, hosted by Tim Howard of HE Safety Consultants.
Common Sense Preparedness would like to announce our new Emergency Information Network is on our website. Here you'll find the latest news regarding food safety, emergency news, FEMA daily reports, medical alerts, solar weather alerts, and hurricane reports. Plus you'll find links to outbreak databases, near-Earth objects, solar flares, and information from government and non-government outlets. Come join us at csp.hesafety.org and take a look at our new Emergency Information Network. Remember, a wise man prepares for darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Listen to Common Sense Preparedness and American Readiness Program at csp.hesafety.org. Or follow us on Google Plus and Facebook. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on CBS Radio. Alright, we've been talking about wildfires in the home, and we're talking about cleaning up debris and all that kind of stuff in the yard. Well, one thing you want to do is you also want to consider a fire-safe landscaping scheme. When designing or installing a fire-safe landscaping, you need to consider the following. The fire history of the local area. Site location and overall terrain. Prevailing winds and seasonal weather. Property contours and boundaries. And native vegetation. You also want to plant, items that will help not promote fires. Plant characteristics and placement. Water, salt retention abilities, aromatic oils, fuel load per area, and the size. When creating a fire-safe landscape, remember that the primary goal is to reduce fire reduction, or fuel reduction for fires. To this end, the zone concept should be utilized. Zone 1 is the closest to the structure. Zone 2 and through 4 move progressively further away. Zone 1, this well-irrigated area encircles the structure for at least 30 feet on all sides, prevents space fire suppression equipment in the event of an emergency. Planting should be limited to carefully spaced low-flammable species of plants. Zone 2, low-flammability plant material should be used here. Plants should be low-growing and irrigation systems should be extended to this section. Now, Zone 3, place low-growing plants and well-spaced trees in this area. Remember to keep the volume of vegetation low. And Zone 4, the furthest zone from the structure, is a natural area. Selectively prune and thin all plants and remove highly flammable vegetation in this zone. Also, remember, widely space and carefully situate the trees that you plant. Take out the latter fuels, vegetation that serves as a link between grass and treetops. This arrangement can carry fire to the structure or from a structure to vegetation. Give yourself added protection with fuel breaks, like driveways, gravel, walkways, and lawns, something that breaks the fuel line. Now, what to do if a wildfire strikes? Wear protective clothing such as sturdy shoes, cotton or woolen clothing, long pants and long sleeve shirts, gloves and handkerchiefs to protect your face. Back your car into the garage, heading out with windows closed and the keys in the ignition. Close the garage door but leave it unlocked. Disconnect the automatic garage door openers in case of power failure. This way you can still open it up and get out fast. Place valuable documents and family mementos inside the car in the garage for a quick departure. Make plans for your pets in case you must evacuate. Now remember, most shelters do not accept pets, so they're going to have to go somewhere else. Keep a flashlight and portable radio with you at all times. Move combustible yard furniture away from the house and store it in the garage. Connect the garden hose to outside water spigots. This way, if you have to try and fight a fire, you can. Assemble in advance a disaster supply kit with items that you will need if advised to evacuate, your go bag. And listen to the local news for reports and evacuation information. Now, what to do during a wildfire? Well, turn on your battery-operated radios and get latest emergency information. Remember, keep informed. Remove combustible items from around the house, lawn, poolside furniture, umbrellas, tarps, and excess firewood. Take down flammable drapes and curtains and close all ventilation blinds and non-combustible window coverings. That's something most people don't talk about. The heat can cause fires inside the home, so you want to take some flammable material like drapes and curtains out of the windows. Close all doors and windows inside your home to prevent a draft, where fire will travel. Close gas valves and turn off all pilot lights. Shut off electricity from the main power panel. Place valuables that may not be damaged by water in a pool or a pond. Fire does not burn water. Heats it up, but it does not burn it. So that's one of the safest places you want to be, is either in a pool or close to water or in a burn spot. Fire does not reburn a burn spot. So if you're in a wildfire and you find an area that's already been burned, you're pretty safe there. If hoses and adequate water is available, leave sprinklers on roofs and anything that might be damaged by fire. Be ready to evacuate all family members and pets when fire nears or instructed to do so by local officials. Now, if you're trapped inside a wildfire, remember a couple things. You cannot outrun a fire. Crouch in a pond or river. Cover your head and upper body with wet clothing. If water is not around, look for shelter in a cleared area among the better rocks. Lie flat and cover body with wet clothing or soil. Breathe the air closest to the ground through a wet cloth to avoid scorching lungs or inhaling smoke. Now, if you don't have a radio or no kind of communications, check the mountaintops, and if you see a dark cloud or dark clouds that are nearly immobile, and then change direction, there's your fire. Often the wind will bring you the smell of a fire before the fire hits you. On foot in a forest, it is useless to try and escape a major forest fire. Your best bet is to throw yourself in the closest water lake or river or even pond. If you have time, you can build a burn zone near the pond, acting as a kind of buffer zone. Keep your clothing and body always wet. Stones near the river or shore will become very hot afterwards, so stay away from them. Don't panic. Only a fire of extreme intensity can make the water in a pond or stagnant water boiling hot, even if this marshy water has very little depth. So it's not going to evaporate or boil the water. A wildfire moves quick, and it's not stationary long enough to boil water. Breathe through a wet cloth and avoid breathing smoke. A fire burns a lot of oxygen around, so don't move. and try to breathe as normally as possible. If you're in a small brush fire and it's impossible to reach a nearby water, you can try and build a buffer zone of a burned area around you that does not work in a major forest fire with walls of fire around you. Avoid at all costs seeking shelter in a cave, because the smoke will either kill you or you will die from lack of oxygen, if not by excessive heat. Caves are not a good thing in a wildfire. Now also remember, wildfires can create its own weather. When a fire reaches into the trees, it fuels itself into an inferno. A tree provides a fuel for a fire as the top sap burns very easily and quickly. When a fire reaches into the treetops, it is referred to as crowning. The water in the trees is turned into water vapor and released into the air as steam. The hot air will rise quickly and form a rain cloud, and the water vapor condenses as it rises. The ash and soot from the fire can also produce a nuclei for the water vapors to attach to and grow into a raindrop. The strong updrifts created by the hot air and steam rising creates winds and also helps fuel the fire. As the winds pick up, it only helps fan the fire, which spreads the flames quickly. It also takes a hot ash into the air where it falls out, starting new fires in surrounding areas. So as you can see, it builds on itself. It has its own nature to it. Now, after a fire, take care when re-entering a burned wildland area. Hot spots can flare up without warning. Check the roof immediately and extinguish any sparks or embers. Check the attic for hidden burning sparks for several hours afterwards. Recheck for smoke and sparks throughout the home on a constant and regular basis for the next 24 hours. Well, that about does it for wildfires. If you want any more information on wildfires, feel free to go to csp.hesafety.org, where we have more articles and more information about wildfires.
Thank you for tuning in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness and American Readiness Program. You may be found at the web at csp.hesafety.org. Remember, a wise man prepares for darkness while full faith fingers off flames. Tune in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness.
Using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao, and even Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Lessons to your daughters and sons, to fear the government that fears your guns. Now the new world order crew, well, they're making their demands. Don't feel safe if you are armed. You say gun control is using both hands.
using both hands.